Oh, the shape up or get. If you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and we're also on iTunes. And also, all our podcasts are on offtheball.com and some of our interviews on YouTube as well. I had a good time at Croke Park on Saturday as Leitrim didn't win, but that doesn't matter. It was the being there that counts. But we'll talk about that a bit later on when we dial in Joe Coffey, who had a better day on Sunday, even though he couldn't actually go to watch Mayo beating Kerry in the Allianz League final. However, we'll get on to football actually first before we even touch on something we're not supposed to, which is GAA. But Derek Ryan, you're here.
Hey, Raf, how's it going?
Not bad. Endicall.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good day for Donegal playing against, what are they called?
Meath. Meath.
The reason I'm asking, obviously, just look at the off the ball Twitter and clips and a viral clip of Enda trying to, well, actually pronounce it correctly or
well,
the
I'm
way
pronouncing
you're
it correctly for my own
for your region.
Yeah, that's exactly what? It.
People in Donegal pronounce it Meath.
Oh God, here we go.
No,
again.
No, let's not do this again.
Yeah, yeah. Meath is how we say it. But yeah, it was a good day, Raf. Good day.
Yeah.
It'll be better next year when we're winning Division One, and even better at the end of summer when we're taking over the All Ireland title.
Okay, we'll get on to that later on. Jonathan Higgins, thanks for coming.
Hello.
Yeah, now we will talk about Liverpool, obviously, because that is your special subject. But before that, I actually just scrolling through Twitter on, was it Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember. But either way, Celtic and Rangers playing in the Old Firm. And obviously, I know, yeah, it was Sunday. Good, thanks for letting me know. But either way, I saw a little argument between you and you, Jonathan, about Scott
Ooh,
Brown.
Who's this?
And,
I think this, I would have jumped right
it's
in
wasted,
there.
It's wasted on social media, so I'd like you to discuss this issue right here, right now. So the problem is, it's Scott Brown and his behaviour. So Enda, maybe just talk us through what happened in that game.
Okay, so Celtic versus Rangers, biggest game of the year. Well, probably not biggest game of the year. I mean, Celtic are already 10 points ahead of them in the table, but basically this was the game where Celtic put to bed any doubt that they were going to be league champions and ended Rangers' chances of winning any bit of silverware this year. So pretty big game. You want your players to remain disciplined in this kind of game. You don't want to getting sent off for something stupid like the maybe elbowing a player or punching a player in the face. And it turned out that two of the Rangers players actually did that. One of them got sent off, one of them got nothing. Morelos Alfredo, he was the first to get into the referee's book. He elbowed Scott Brown on the 33rd minute. And Ryan Kent then punched Scott Brown in the face on the 86th minute. He didn't get anything. I don't think the referee's seen it, to the referee's credit, in fairness. But go on to Twitter after the game, and I see this man over here, Jonathan Higgins, is blaming Scott Brown for getting elbowed in the face.
In fairness, there is one common denominator. It is Scott Brown. However, I looked at it and I saw the funny side. You know, even if you provoke someone, it doesn't mean someone has to hit
just
you.
Just to set the record clear, like, I grew up in a family where, like, obviously it's a Liverpool mad family I grew up in. I think that's pretty evident the way I've developed in my sporting favourites and team choices, etc. But like, Celtic would have been very much the second team that would fall, like a lot of Irish families, probably not as strong as where you grew up in, probably more of a Celtic kind of a crossover there, if for want of a better word. But Celtic is pretty much your first choice team.
Yeah, well, it was very much United or Celtic were the
so like teams. And just to go on that one step further, Rangers would be, to say they were disliked in my household would be an underestimation, and so that still kind of has remained with me throughout. It's not one of these things where I think I saw somebody saying to me, oh, it's because Steven Gerrard is at Rangers. Absolutely no way. The last thing I want as a personal point of view is, I wish Gerrard the best in his own personal career, but that's not a conversation.
I get to the point here, come on. We want to be all this argument.
The fact that a player, a captain of a team that like I would consider my second team is winding me up that much speaks volumes. And the fact that if he was happened to be wearing the blue side of Rangers, which he was very close to doing on a number of stages of his career, wound me up before. I just detest that dark side of the game. And what really, really annoys me is the fact that, you know, he's made a career out of being that type of character. I don't think he can say that he's a very good footballer. You look at your captains, you know, you look at your great captains, even look at Keane or wherever, who was a player that kind of lived on the edge. By God, he could play as well. Just Brown just seems to be, his one sole aim is just to be this kind of hard man approach. And he just winds me up. I just detest that dark side of the game. Like the first one, like he should have been booked as well. Like he clips out and trips someone, but like he's just provoking people. The second one is probably a little bit more kind of nothing in it, but he is still acting the clown a bit, holding on to the ball. I'm not defending the punch or not defending the elbow in any shape or form. But I just detest that kind of dark arts of players. Like you look at other players that kind of cross over to the dark arts, even as much as it pains me to dislike him, Ramos. Very much a guy that lives on the edge, but look, he backs it up and you
see, this is where I think people are wrong.
Okay.
And especially people who, and it's been an opinion that's been thrown around all year and pretty much any time Scott Brown's brought into the conversation. It's like people are basing their opinion off Scott Brown's footballing ability off the one game that they watch every single year, which is Old Firm.
Much more than
Scott
that.
Brown is a lot better of a footballer.
Do you think
than
Scott Brown,
make him out.
Do you think Scott Brown's a good footballer?
I think he has improved immensely under Brendan Rodgers over the past 2 years. His footballing ability is a lot better than people actually imagine. He was Celtic's by far and away best player last season.
But is that saying much?
Look
at him in Europe.
Celtic's best player ahead of a player who's now starting for Lyon.
Okay, so you flip him back, you put him in a championship team. Do you think he stands out?
The point is he's playing for Celtic. You know what I mean? So he's playing in the Scottish Premiership. Are you asking, is he the best player in the world? Like, Ramos is one of the best defenders in the world. Like, you're not comparing like for like.
It's relative.
But Scott Brown's a very good player playing in Scotland. It's not like he is this absolute, like, you know, he's awful, and his only attribute is winding up players. He obviously has a bit of quality about him.
Yeah, you don't.
I think he's a bang average footballer.
You don't play for the best team in Scotland for the last 10 years and start consistently in the midfield by being a bang average player. If you look at some of the players, look at Joey Barton for example, player of the championship, and everyone said he was going to come over and boss in the Scottish League, and he got absolutely nowhere near it. He didn't have the legs. If you look at Scott. At Armstrong, who's playing at Southampton now, consistently playing for Southampton. Scott Brown was keeping him out of the team. You don't do that by being a bang average footballer. He has a lot more footballing ability than people give him credit for. Yes, he is a shithouse. Yes, he starts all these different arguments, different things. People don't like him. If he played for Rangers, I wouldn't like him. Because he's that type of player. People love to hate him, but he is a lot better at playing football than people give him credit.
The point that I hate that side of the game quite a lot. I don't mind people being aggressive in the tackle or whatever, but just going out just to try and create stuff. And he's done it too many times for to be you know, a coincidence or whatever.
How,
you know,
can you hate? I love that. I love footballers who, again, because they're, like, for example, Ander Herrera is a bit of one of those kind of players.
He is, but to be
and
fair,
I
to
love
be...
Ander Herrera, and I love Ander Herrera for several different reasons. One of the reasons is because he's a bit of a shithouse and he causes loads of problems for the opposition and winds up the opposition and, you know, takes the ball when the opposition are looking for the ball and gets the opposition angry and puts them off their game. So if the opposition are angry, if in the last minute the Rangers player is punching Scott Brown, his focus isn't on trying to score a leveler. His focus is on trying to take it out on Scott Brown.
A couple of seconds after, look, the punch was horrible. You don't want to see that in the game. I'm not defending that.
I don't think I've ever seen a player throw a punch like that. Like you often see like a little push in the chest, but it was a proper
punch up between John Giles and Kevin Keegan back.
There was actually the last time I saw. He got booked for that. I think
it was before our time.
I think he got booked for that.
It was incredible how that wasn't seen by. How many officials there is around the place?
I don't know. It
was mind-boggling. But the fact that you'd say, is he trying to put Kent off his game? Like, Kent absolutely ripped. Like, this is a Rangers team that were down to 10 men quite early in the game who created a lot of problems to Celtic and were pushing on hard at the end. And even Ryan Kent, after that, right at the end, he cuts completely past the whole Celtic defence. It comes back. I think the keeper kind of saves it. It goes out for
a corner. That's the biggest issue. Is he didn't get sent off for that, and he almost scored.
So the argument that he put Ryan Kent off his game, I don't think stands up.
Obviously, Ryan Kent's focus wasn't completely on scoring an equaliser. He was punching punch him in the face. You know what I mean? The point is that that sort of tactic, which many players do, and Ramos does it, and Herrera does it, and Scott Brown does it, is to put other players off, or the opposition off their game. And I think I love players. Again, I hate players if they're the opposition, but I love
but people
players.
Love, yeah, people yeah, love to hate players these like players.
There's, yeah, exactly.
Another example I would use, Dele Alli. Dele Alli is very confrontational in the style of football.
Extremely.
But if someone punches Dele Alli, it's not his fault. It's the player's fault for losing his cool and not actually thinking about the broader picture of the game. Morelos has 5 red cards this year.
Oh, he's incredible.
I said last night, I said a couple of times.
He's a far bigger problem than Scott Brown.
Yeah, he could.
17 yellows, I think, as well.
17 yellows, yeah. And honestly, he could have at least 8 or 9 red cards this year. No question.
It's like you look at the team beforehand, you know he's going to get sent off. You know, yeah, he's going to do something stupid. And I can, look, to a certain point, I can see why Scott Brown would have targeted him. He clearly did. I can see why he would have done it. Like, it's just the side of the game that personally I don't like to see.
Yeah, but as we've mentioned, there are a lot of players who have that yet. They can still, like Materazzi, Adrian Collins just in the WhatsApp group was talking about him. Obviously, he wound up Zidane, and there were previous incidents before that.
And, he's quite possibly won the World Cup.
He won the World Cup. Yeah. He scored in that final as well.
But like, won the World Cup because if Zidane had still been on the pitch, he may have taken one of those penalties and they wouldn't have lost. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're winning the World Cup, do you really care that you've wound somebody?
Like Celtic fans, you know, would I'm sure absolutely idolise them. It's just personally, I wouldn't like to see,
or Sergio Ramos.
But like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
If Sergio Ramos played for Liverpool, you'd adore him for what he does.
Of course, probably. I'm not going to stand there and lie. I won't. Everyone has their whole bias, but if I was trying to strip it back,
who's the Liverpool over the last say 20 years? Who is that player for Liverpool? Or have you even had one?
We've been so soft for so long. I don't think we've really had him. Mascherano was a bit. Didi Amon, he's put his foot in a bit.
Yeah, Mascherano was definitely that type of player.
He was edgy. He tried. Even
he played on the edge.
Fabinho, to a certain extent, seems to thrive on kicking someone. I don't think we've seen a lot of him yet from that side, but he does have a bit of an edge to him. Yeah, I think you have to kind of go back further back. You have to look
Razor
to a certain extent as well. Souness, especially. There was a different game back then.
Just a hatchet man.
But like, you can imagine the likes of Souness or whatever up against Brown. Like, if he'd done that little thing, he would have got chopped. Even like, can you imagine Keane's reaction? What he would have done to Scott Brown? Like, it would have
been. This is the question that it raises: is Scott Brown actually a hard man, or is he just putting it on? People think he's just putting it on, but I'm not so sure. I would like to see. I've seen Scott Brown put in some fairly hefty tackles. Like, he is a bit of a hatchet man as well. Like, he does have an edge. For example, Ander Herrera. Ander Herrera is one of these players where he'll stick in a leg and then he'll go down holding his face. Whereas Scott Brown actually does play.
I just remember,
the edge.
I can't remember who it was. I think it was in the SPL, but Scott Brown had wound a lot of people up and he was going a little run with the ball and about 2 or 3 people kind of came into him and, it's about 2 or 3 bad tackles in a row, late one, but he kept on going and he just literally ran straight and then eventually gets a free kick where he gets chopped down and he just stands up and won't really come across well on radio, but he puts out the chest and stands up and marches up and almost starts beating himself down.
He starts strutting. That was the first old firm of the season. Ryan,
was that it was an old firm?
Yeah,
was it?
It was Ryan Jack who was trying to hack him down.
Didn't actually realise that was an old firm. I just remember that clip.
I don't know how he didn't get sent off for that. But
there was the other one and it was a former Arsenal defender who chopped him down. And then he just, whenever Celtic scored a goal, he just kind of celebrated.
That was against Diouf. Al-Hajji Diouf. They had a.
Was it Diouf that he celebrated in front of? I think there was another.
He did the whole kind of.
There was another player, I think, out, as well. Yeah, that I tried to chop him down.
Himself and Diouf used to have some, like, Jesus.
Well,
like,
Diouf's another one.
Talk about dark arts there.
Morelos, one for Morelos is the new Diouf. Like, he has that stature now within Rangers that Celtic fans hate him as much as they hated Diouf, and Diouf spat on fans.
Yeah. There's obviously a level, you know,
there's shithousery and then that.
Being a scumbag. Yeah. You know, and there's this, you know, it's a fine line, maybe.
But we had this debate 5 years ago, and in regards to Diouf, would you rather be spat at or punched in the face? So I don't know.
I'd rather be punched in the
face.
I think most people would rather be punched in the face.
Spat at's
just disgusting. And like I said, there's a fine line between being the Scott Brown and being the Diouf, but it is a line that you don't want to cross.
But like, Scott Brown's only, you know, provoking. He's not hitting out first.
Absolutely. No,
and then
that's what I'm saying.
His post-match interview I absolutely loved as well. Particularly, like, he gets asked
over to congratulate him.
Yeah.
And it's the little smirk. It's the smirk after your man, the reporter kind of goes, really?
And I mean, doesn't that just show you what kind of person he is?
Well, the point is, he knew what he was doing going into the game. He did it. He got your man sent off, and they won the game 2-1.
Surely Stephen Gerrard, as manager, or one of the other coaches there, kind of goes to them and like, you know, Scott Brown is playing against you. He's going to provoke you. This is an Old Firm derby overall. Obviously, Morelos doesn't probably listen to that kind of thing, given he's been sent off about five times.
Yeah. One of Gerrard's, if you look at his short managerial career, and that's probably extorted a little bit, gone in the bubble house that is with Rangers, but his teams have been way, they've no control of their aggression at all.
Even he didn't really during his
career. No, he didn't. When he was the younger stages of his career, he'd have almost a big problem because he was continuously doing, like he openly admitted that, you know, his first big tackle was to set down a marker, and some of them were well over the edge.
Well, Ander Herrera, he stamped on in what year was it?
It was his last game.
Last game.
15 seconds or something on the pitch.
Yeah, like, but Stephen Gerrard, his managerial tactic, or I'm not even sure what you would call it, his approach is so bizarre that it doesn't make any sense. It's completely non-textbook at all. He criticizes his players worse than I've ever seen a manager criticize his players. There was one game in the Champions League where I think it was against Spartak Moscow, and they'd drawn 3-3, and he came out after the game and he said his under-13s, even his under-13s know how to clear the ball with his left foot.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
Tore his team to shreds. Like, after last night, it's no surprise that Morelos keeps doing this, because he came out yesterday and said, this is the last time I'm going to defend Morelos. I can't stand by him anymore.
But how is he?
And in the next sentence, he says, but I'm still going to protect him. What does that mean?
It's weird. Like, how he's still at the club, the player Morelos is still at the club is boggling, because, like, it's always one of these where you balance up the good and the bad.
Yeah.
He's a complete hothead. He's such a liability, as we've seen. But is he that good of a footballer to counteract it? I don't think he is.
He's actually quite a good striker. He's very wasteful. Like, he has 29 goals this season.
I don't think he's worth the risk.
Could easily be 36. He should have scored 3 against Celtic in the second game of the season. But it's just, you can't argue that somebody who's going to get sent off in these kind of big games is worth the risk of that.
You can find strikers
out there that's going to score 29 goals in the Scottish
League
without being such a liability.
Well, I think Rangers didn't realise when they're buying a prolific striker, it's the disciplinary column, I think, that seems to be the area.
Well, I mean, obviously players can work on their discipline. Like, we've spoken about Gerrard, we've spoken about Keane. You know, in his early days, he was a lot more fiery than he was maybe.
Alfinger Haaland. That was quite near the end.
At the start, he was particularly bad, and players can kind of curb their maybe enthusiasm a small bit, so he can be worked on. But yeah, if you're a liability like that going into an Old Firm game, the one game you need to be able to maintain control, and you know Scott Brown's playing for the opposition, just don't. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So yeah, from a Gerrard point of view, I'd be very disappointed with that.
I would like to have seen Gerrard against Brown in their heyday. That would have been quite a battle.
Battle is the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, Adrian as well added in Ricardo Carvalho as being kind of that similar. Yeah, I don't remember him being too.
He was a bit of a shit, as he mentioned
the Rooney thing in the World Cup, where but in fairness, Rooney did stamp back on his. Not sure what to call it on air, but
groin area.
Yeah, slightly to the side of the groin.
Pepe is another one.
Oh yeah,
Pepe.
Pepe is another one. I'm just going to throw this name out here, and because it has it's fresh in my mind from the other day. Do you remember Dida,
the goalkeeper?
Yeah. He was a bit of a shithouse as well.
Oh, the time against Celtic where the fans?
Yeah, the fan came on. Celtic scored a last minute winner from
dance
a corner
in front of him,
and a fan came on and gave him a little tap on the face, like a kind of well done tap on the face, and he ran after him,
and then fell to the ground
as if he was going to punch him, and then he just turned around and fell to the ground, holding his face as if he was shot. It was
horrible.
But apart from that, he was actually a bit of a shithouse, as well as that.
Rivaldo, actually, not in general, but the one incident at the 2002 World Cup where
the
Turkish player,
I
think it was Alpay, kicks the ball at him and hits him in the thigh area.
Yeah, the leg area, and then he's holding his head.
About a millisecond later, I think, as he realises, I can actually affect the game here, then he throws the hands up to the face and falls to the ground. But
I scribbled on a list earlier on my way over Diego Costa.
Oh,
I love Diego Costa.
Yeah, I can't stand
for example, there's
like,
another player
I can't
who's
stand
a shithouse.
Yeah.
I absolutely love him.
I actually very much like him as well. Again, he does exactly. Didier Drogba did a very similar job when he came to Chelsea first, especially. He was awful to play against. He was throwing his arms around.
Couldn't
Fellaini
stay
threw his arms around left, right, and centre. Nowhere near the quality as obviously as Drogba, but threw his arms around, made hassle for the opposition, and made the opposition angry. And obviously, it worked well. Yeah. Drogba was particularly brilliant at it.
Yeah, I remember particularly when Drogba first came that the commentators got they got so annoyed that you could actually hear it in their voices that such a big striker, such a strong striker, was going around throwing himself to the ground, because it was kind of like the mid-era of the Premier League where it's finally starting to come. You're starting to see far more foreign players come into the game. So obviously, you know, English players don't dive. So you have these foreign players coming in and bringing dive into the game.
Robin was another one. That was another one.
The funniest thing about Drogba was that everyone's like, he's a really nice guy. Everyone off the pitch, apparently, he's a really nice guy.
He helped solve the Ivory Coast Civil War. Maybe not in the not in the negotiations.
Has he built a hospital for young kids?
He's done good things. He didn't actually solve the Civil War.
Apparently, he's like this.
That's hyperbole.
Gentleman and real quiet off the pitch, and then on the pitch, he's the exact opposite.
But it's the same with like Suarez as well. Like, by all accounts, off the pitch, he does a lot of charity work, but he's such a calm, quiet guy, and he crosses that white line and turns into a psycho.
But I think he's gone and seen a psychologist about the biting thing. That's the line.
That, you know, well, certain players, Liverpool-related players, can't seem to find that.
Yeah, like go back to your earlier question. Suarez probably deserves to be on that
yeah,
list.
Yeah, actually, he does. Yeah.
The first player that sprang to mind for this was Gattuso, but I'm actually thinking about it more and more. And Gattuso was just a little bit of a thug. He wasn't. Can I say that?
Yes.
I
don't know if you've done it anyway. So
he stepped over the line several times. He could have broken several players' legs. He definitely, one time at least, spat on players.
He was snide as well. You know, he would like, one of those tackles where someone's kicking the ball, he would leave the foot in. Yeah. You know, he'd done a lot.
He was a character, I think they call it in the game. Because I remember after Italy won the World Cup, and obviously he was part of that team, he's just there, nothing on except his pants. And he's like grabbing Marcello Lippi by the hair, as in the manager, a venerable elderly man. And he's just pulling him. Either side, it was meant to be playful, but it just seemed a little bit over the edge and maybe thuggish to a degree. But obviously he's gone on to have a middling managerial career. Well, apart from that one clip where I think he was managing Crete or something and seemed to go a little mad with the swearing. Yeah, but of course, it's funny, not in English.
I watched him play a couple of weeks ago. He was playing for the Milan Legends team.
Yeah.
It was like a classic example of legs and head aren't on the same speed anymore, because he's going around trying to kick everyone but just wasn't getting there in time. It was all action, to say the least, which was funny to see. A couple of other ones that I kind of just scribbled down, we've actually spoke about a lot of them so far. Ramos, Barton, Keane to a certain extent.
One thing with Ramos, I've just seen every penalty he seems to have taken in the last while seems to be a Panenka.
Yeah,
I think a goalkeeper just needs to stand still, or at least, you know, not move.
The percentage judges odds are very much in the case of staying down the middle there with Emerald. Who else? Costa Diouf, we've all touched on. Robbie Savage to a certain extent as well. He's to get under my skin as well a bit, I have to say.
Robbie Savage in particular, yeah, he's definitely one of that. And one of those players who wasn't that good, to be perfectly fair.
Yeah, relied on
also,
that.
But also had that, maybe that was the edge that gave him a career,
perhaps,
that without that
perhaps,
edge he
yeah.
may not
yeah, no,
have
perhaps
had any
I
sort of
definitely take that point.
He's a nice man though. He appeared on Team 33 once. So that's
Team 33 legend.
That's the barometer now these days, isn't it? Lee Cattermore, again, another player that I used to wind up. He seems to forever be getting booked and sent off and flying into tackles a lot. And the last one is probably a little bit biased, but Duncan Ferguson was a bit of a tramp.
Oh, Duncan
as well.
Was a prime example. He was the Drogba of what, the 90s?
Yeah, Duncan Ferguson. And you also reminded me of Barry Ferguson. Barry Ferguson was the Rangers version of Scott Brown in the early 2000s. So
yeah, he was down in Birmingham then for a while, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
But Duncan is,
and Alan McGregor as well, sorry.
Duncan Ferguson was like the original.
Arthur Barrage,
definitely.
But I think he just specifically trolled one club, and that was it.
Yeah, was it mostly just the crowd?
Yeah, it was pretty much. Yeah, but you see, Lee Griffiths does something similar now, where he gets a scarf from the Celtic end and goes down and ties it on the goalposts whenever they won. He did it like three times against Rangers last year. It went down a treat.
Just reminded me of one last one that we'll probably leave it at this then. It's going to go back, probably the original one for me, Vinnie Jones.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is that famous picture of him grabbing, and I'm not again
the groin
sure
area.
Groin yeah, the groin area, area grabbing yeah. Paul Gascoigne by the groin area. I think they kind of redid a version there recently, just posing for a photo with the same kind of pose.
There was a famous ad as well afterwards, wasn't it? Gaz was in an ad and he started like fake crying because someone grabbed him by the groin area.
Really?
I think all
right. I wasn't aware. I don't know what type of ad that would be for. But
I would say if you thought about it hard, you could probably think of a lot more from the kind of late 90s, early 2000s era than now. And it is something that's gone out. Yeah. It's something that's gone out of the game a little bit. And we're going to miss these characters when they're gone. When there's no edge to any player.
Yeah.
When like if you think of the top six, I can think of maybe one or two players that actively get you
is
angry.
Is there anyone in City's team?
Fernandinho, perhaps?
No, not even.
Fernandinho is a bit more cynical than
he is.
Yeah,
he's just like he gets away with about three or four yellow cards, tackles a game.
Yeah, there's no one really in City or Liverpool team.
But
the game
has changed a lot. You know, it's newer, faster pitches. Yeah. It's a different style of play. It's not as direct.
You wouldn't
anymore.
Get away with the tackles.
No, there's so much more attention on games now, I think, as well. But Vinnie Jones had some good quotes there on the whole Scott Brown incident. He said he wouldn't have swung back in the time. He would have just done him. Wrong in the game.
See, that's it. Like, even just sticking a late leg, you might get away with it. Don't elbow in the face. You're never getting away with it.
I was just childish. And,
exactly. Yeah. Thomas Graverson is another one before we finish off the segment.
Oh, yes, yeah. But I think Kev said he's not a hard man. We did a piece on him actually about 3 weeks ago.
Only Carsley
well,
was the kind of the.
Yeah, Carsley was the enforcer. Graverson actually, despite not looking like a hard man, was actually more the playmaker.
Yeah,
because
I remember
even,
he was a really good player.
Yeah, very good.
But remember the quote, because Graverson got the move to Real Madrid and he ended up playing holding midfield. And I remember David Moyes talking about it afterwards and like, well, if it was a holding midfielder, they're looking, it was the other ball guy, they needed Lee Carsley.
Yeah, and now we are going to switch very, very briefly to Joe Coffey, who is on the line now.
Well, Raph, maybe I should stay away from Croke Park. I mean, if Sunday is anything to go by. I do my wish for the team by staying away, you know. but I know it was. I got to watch it was bizarre because after the euphoria of the win for a couple of minutes afterwards, when I saw all the scenes in Croke Park, I was so sorry I wasn't there. But there was nothing I could do about it. But I know it's been a nice feeling to know that Mayo are league champions and have finally ended their run of. Losing / drawing national finals.
And what does this mean for the summer now? Is this a journey towards an All-Ireland? I don't think so.
Well, I don't think it's changed anything in terms of what the goal for the summer is. That's to win back the Connacht title and get into the Super 8 for the first time and take it from there, you know. I think...
you sound like an inter-county manager for going out loud.
It's a game of two halves.
We'll take things game by game. And see how things go. Will you come on out of that? You're a Mayo fan. All you care about is winning the All-Ireland.
That's true. All we care about is winning the All-Ireland. But, like, Mayo fans are often accused of insane optimism, Derek. So,
no.
I suppose my big worry would be that that Mayo people would let the league win go to their heads. And, you know, because the last time Mayo won a league title was in 2001 and they lost a Connacht final.
What happened
in
2001?
2001, yeah. Why, what did I say?
What happened in 2001, though?
There was some, there's 2001, Galway won the All-Ireland.
Oh, there we go,
course.
Yeah.
Joe, do you think this is a bit like the England football team where you're sort of just playing down everything and there's just such a great group of lads that the media coverage will be once again in your favour and you should go to the All-Ireland as underdogs and still come out losing?
Well, I think if the coverage over the last couple of days is anything to go by, the media are just desperate for Mayo to keep giving anyway, because I mean, most national finals, they could pass you by in the blink of an eye and you'd nearly forget they were on. But geez, the coverage of this one was... Even by our media's general coverage of these kind of events, it was a bit over the top, you know. But it was, I know, look, I mean, like, in fairness, when Kieran Tracy was bearing down on goal, it was with deep in injury time, I was shouting at him to pull him over the bar. And it was actually class to see him pull it in the net because it shows a great player instinct. And I think the fact that Mayo have tried 34 players in the league and have found a couple of seemingly guys with a really good future behind in front of them. I think there's lots to be optimistic, particularly when you look at what happened last year and the way everyone was going around saying, oh, it's the end of a great team. And now, you know, in such a short space of time, everybody's talking about Mayo being back.
We showed them. We showed them. Look at us now.
But I think,
in your
I
face, think, everybody.
I think the move of Aidan O'Shea's midfield has worked well over the last three games. He was playing in his normal centre-forward role up until the Galway match, and then he moved back to midfield. And I remember Jim McGuinness talking in his autobiography about the 2012 All-Ireland final, and in particular the fact that they needed to target Aidan to make sure Aidan O'Shea didn't get the ball on his left foot because he was an excellent passer of the ball. And I think over the last few years, that's kind of been lost, the ability he has with his left foot. And I think he showed that on Sunday. I mean, that pass he gave into James Carr was unbelievable. And if Carr had got that goal, it probably would have been goal of the league, you know?
Yeah, well, I also didn't get the chance to celebrate a victory. But actually, Joe, that Croke Park experience, definitely something I'm going to be doing again.
Well,
who knew?
I've always got your last outing, Gaelic outing this year, Raph. And anyway, in fairness, Leitrim could definitely have won that game if they hadn't picked somebody wise. Like, they had a lot of the ball.
Well, look, we were 7-5 up at one point, and there were a few kind of frees that should have gone over, and, you know, chances that we probably should have converted, and then you'd be talking about a 6-7 point gap. Derry probably still would have closed much of that down, but look, they were far more clinical. But it was madness, though, because again, like, the way there's an obsession with Mayo, I guess, there were so few Derry fans in the stadium, and then you have a load of just pretty much all Leitrim. Well, not all Leitrim, because I do know people who happen to be back home at the time as well, but just so many Leitrim people around. It was just surreal. Like, I've never seen that many people from the county in one place at any time, and that includes back home.
You were saying that, all right.
Yeah, it was just surreal.
And sure, Enda had a good day out with Donegal as well.
I did, but it's only Division 2.
Well, I suppose.
You want to win the big ones.
The league matters, except, well, when my county's in it.
See, the thing you have to take here, Raph, is that it's not so long ago Derry were a Division 2 side.
Yeah.
And this is a Leitrim side on the rise, so keep the head. You might be in Croke Park sooner than you think.
Yeah, it's September, maybe.
Super 8s.
That might be pushing it a little bit. But actually, that whole question, actually, because Mayo have finally got a trophy, obviously, after such a long wait. And there's always that talk of a trophy might be the thing that wins, or, you know, leads a team to kind of go on to win bigger things. Obviously, for Mayo, it's the All-Ireland. Liverpool, Jonathan, obviously, this current Klopp team hasn't actually won anything. And the whole talk is one trophy, and we might be seeing a start of a new era. I don't know, is that a bit cliched, though?
I think it is to a certain extent. I think there's been enough development over the squad in such a short space of time. If you step back of it and step away from the insane title bubble that we're in now in terms of the challenge and everything that goes with it, if you step back for a moment and just look at the improvement in the team, like this team last season, just about, I think it was the last day of the season, qualified again for the Champions League in fourth spot. So there's a lot to come from ultimately for Liverpool fans, and it's been repeated to death comes. It's the important thing is to win the league. That's even, like, we've had success in Europe, not that recently now, 2005, in relative short term. That if you're talking about a trophy, I it's a weird one. Yes, I can see the substance of trophies, but I always look back and say, look at Mourinho's reign at United. You know, he was lucky enough to win, and deservedly so. They won a couple of cups. Did that kind of make the step through? Did that make the bonus? Probably not. So I think it's too much at times is kind of overemphasized in the terms of winning a trophy. Is it a stepping stone? I can see it to one thing, but I think it gets overplayed at times.
I do think there was a difference in that, you know, Mourinho's United were winning trophies that United fans had become accustomed to really slagging off. You know, they were going for the Champions League and the Premier League. To win the Premier League for Liverpool would be a massive step. Like, United needed to win the Premier League under Mourinho, really, to kind of stand up and take notice. It was still kind of the League Cup, the Europa. You know, there were kind of trophies that United fans
Well, actually, Joe, just on that, because I remember that Arsenal team that Wenger built after the Invincibles, there was all that talk for years. Obviously, there was the trophy drought, but had they won one, that was the kind of discussion that they probably would have gone on and won a league or maybe even a Champions League. They got close a couple of times. I don't know if that's quite true, though, again, given just the frailties.
I know, because, like, well, that's it, Raph. I mean, I suppose, like, if you're talking about, like, trophies can only be stepping stones in hindsight, you know, and And the problem, say, with Arsenal, people were talking about spur them on, but really they won a couple of FA Cups, and ultimately the squad wasn't good enough, with the exception of the season, you know, where Leicester won it, where anyone really could have won the league. The squad was never good enough, and when you look at teams that go down that road where you say, oh well, they were always building towards something. There was never that feeling about Arsenal that they were building towards something, because it was always two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back. I mean, with the likes of Liverpool, there is a feeling that they're building towards something, even if the performances aren't while they're getting the results, the performances of late in the Premier League aren't giving you that feeling that they're on an amazing run, but they are. So I think that like you can tell an awful lot by just the way what kind of players are on paper and just the consistency of results. You know,
yeah, because even say at the end of that Spurs game, you know, if that was that Arsenal team, they probably would have ended up losing, or you know, they wouldn't have that Van Dijk moment where he puts it so quiet on his left foot.
I mean, Arsenal of old, like, no, you'd say they definitely wouldn't have gotten a result out of that game. Maybe now with the way they're playing, well, certainly the way they're playing at the moment, you could argue, well, who knows? But I think that Liverpool, if we've seen, are going to be, you know, they'll either win the league. I have a feeling that this Liverpool team, if they don't win the league this season, it may be difficult for them next year to recover from it, because I think that the insanity of this season is that Liverpool have already surpassed the points total that United's treble winning team got, and I think that the emotional effort, if they keep running with City all the way to the wire, I mean. It's a bit like, you know, if you outperform every metric your team is given at the start of the season, and you beat every single metric your team is given, I just don't see how you can lift yourself to hit those metrics again without a few fundamental changes in terms of playing.
It's like Napoli of last season, and who, by any stretch of the imagination, in a points total, probably would have won the league in most Serie A seasons. Juventus still managed to find a way to pip them. I mean, I remember watching the Napoli game where they beat Juve in the head-to-head, and you kind of think, oh, there's a moment building here. And then you look this season, okay, they've great manager in Ancelotti, but you never got the sense that they're ever going to, you know, they weren't going to have that same season again, because it's just, again, as you said, the emotional side of it. You can't reach that pitch again.
Exactly. And for Liverpool, I think, well, say there's still a good ways to go. So if Liverpool collapse now, you'd argue, well, actually, they need to make a few additions to the team. Whereas if they stay neck and neck with City all the way to the end, I mean, it's very difficult. Like without Liverpool, unless Liverpool go out and spend, I don't know, 150 million on a couple of players or one player, it's very difficult to identify how they can actually improve next season. Yeah, especially if they end up with it if they end up being pipped to the title by a point or two, it'll be very difficult to pinpoint, well, this is where we went wrong. I mean, they've lost one game all season.
Yeah, psychologically, it's a big thing if they don't win the league this year.
Yeah,
I would still argue that even if Liverpool don't win the league this season, that they'll still be in contention for that next season, as long as Jurgen Klopp is still there, of course.
And certain players stay, the likes of Salah,
Van Dijk, Alisson, all these players, but you. I think they have the nugget of a team that's almost too strong to just collapse psychologically next year.
Too much of a core there.
It'll be like the year that City pipped United to the league on goal difference, and next year Alex Ferguson went out and bought Van Persie and they absolutely walked the league. Next year, for me, I think if Liverpool don't win this league, Jurgen Klopp's not afraid to spend money. He'll build a much stronger midfield, because that's definitely where they're lacking at the minute.
Well, we might see a better Keita, because it seems Klopp doesn't just throw players in. He lets them kind of ferment a little bit. Like Fabinho didn't start straight away, and then you look at him now, probably better than Henderson.
Keita's struggling, and it's the strength of the... There's an insanely strong bond with the Liverpool first team at the moment. The squad is so tight. Klopp has treated it like his family. There's no bad eggs there. It's even one of the reasons why Klein was allowed to go. It's an example of, we just keep the minimum people together and have no negativity whatsoever. that's great in from one point of view, but it's also very, very difficult for someone new then to try and break into that. And that's one of the things where Naby Keita struggled. Yes, he's had a lot of injuries as well, but he hasn't really got that trust, for want of a better word, or kind of edged his way in it. I do think he's a fantastic footballer. I thought he would boss the Premier League this season. He hasn't. I think you'll see a lot stronger version of him next season when he settles in a bit more and will become quite effective. But it's not as if, like, if whatever happens between now and the end of the season, it's not as if there's going to be like a mass exit of Liverpool players. You go back to the last time Liverpool were close, Suarez left, and we absolutely threw them
away. No, it's not going to be like that.
It's not like a crossroads.
It's a very different team as well. This team is far better than the Brendan Rodgers 2014 team, who relied pretty much on Suarez.
Absolutely, yeah. And Stephen Sturridge and Sterling to a lesser extent.
But even the only Suarez and then the others kind of fed off Suarez. Absolutely, yeah. Whereas there's a lot more quality in this team.
The only player that you could think of that if Liverpool sold, it could cause a collapse like that is Van Dijk.
Yeah.
Because Van Dijk was the final piece of the puzzle, and he might actually not be the final piece of the puzzle if they don't go on and win the league this year, but next year they definitely will add that. They need another striker to fill in. If they need goals, they need someone to come in that's better than Origi. They need a better midfield partnership. You can't bring on Milner and expect him to go on and win you the game. You need more players that are actually going to go on to change the dynamic of the game, and they don't have that right now. I'm not sure if you know more than I do about Shaqiri, but I'm not really sure why Shaqiri's fallen out of favour. He seemed to be that player at the start of the season for Liverpool.
Yeah, kind of multiple things. He had a bit of an injury, and again, he had a couple of games where maybe five, seven games where he was below par, and again, didn't really kind of. Shaqiri's one of these kind of almost luxury players. You know, you put him on to have a bit of class. You know, he'll flick the ball around. Like, even look at the game against United, he came on and made the difference. He's that type of player, but he's not going to give you the graft that's required under the Liverpool system. Yeah. And as a result, he doesn't really have the full trust. That combined with his injury was a reason why, in times, Klopp like picked Adam Lallana ahead of him, just because he knew he was kind of one he's tried and trusted. That's why, for better or for worse, that's why he's gone with that. He's trusted midfield for so many times, if you want to call him that. That I think is hopefully, if you're in a weird way, hopefully the weekend was kind of a bit of an eye-opener on that, because the fact that, you know, Milner and Henderson were so poor that, you know, it was a bold move taking both of them off at the same time with, 15 minutes to go or whatever. And that the fact that he went for broken for games where he's almost got agitated before at particular times. I think it was the Derby where, you know, someone said, a reporter said to him afterwards, you know, why don't you take more risks? And he was like, this isn't PlayStation football. And I think Nathan and Brian Kerr touched on there at the weekend and in their post-match stuff. This was very much PlayStation football at the end. Liverpool went completely gung-ho. It's one of the reasons why we had that Sissoko chance, and there was a couple of other chances. I think Dele Alli had another one, and there's a couple of more handful of breaks where it was absolute desperation to get that goal.
I think Liverpool are in a position now where they kind of have to go for wins, because City are so strong. City are an incredible side, and they're so strong that, like, a draw in this situation, it's still quite early, obviously, to be saying a draw is losing you the title, but a draw could be a massive moment in the thing. So it's nearly worth taking the risk of losing the game, which they obviously did at the weekend, and ended up obviously winning the game. That risk is nearly worth taking, because you could literally be throwing the league title away. It's still slightly early to be saying that, but I think it could ring true.
That game in particular, though.
Can I just come in for a second? Can I?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, no, like, I suppose all I was saying was that, while I'm not saying the team is going to break up or anything, I'm just saying that, like, ultimately, for the team, the nucleus of the team he has, you still only get, like, a year or two with that before it breaks up naturally anyway.
I don't think Klopp's staying there for much longer than two or three more years.
Yeah, because his record with Dortmund would suggest that, I mean, they were knocking on the door, and then he won a couple of league titles with them, and then they slipped back, well, gradually slipped back, in fairness.
Yeah, but they had one particular, I think his last season, they were particularly bad, like, they were in the relegation zone or bottom, I think.
Yeah.
But he'd burnt, it's
a different circumstance.
Different type of team as well, and he had them pressing much more intensely than this Liverpool team.
This Liverpool team is more of a, there's more of a stronger foundation put in it. We've seen it this season where they've won games. It's not quite ugly, but it's not the hell for leather.
It's ugly. Liverpool standards is ugly. But not necessarily in a bad way.
In Klopp standards, it would be like, you compare the football that he's renowned. If you think Klopp, guy can press on heavy metal football, it's...
I ask, where does this idea heavy metal football come from, then?
It's because I think it was a quote back. I think it was actually against Arsenal, a Champions League tie against Arsenal, where there was a
Wenger's orchestra.
It was very much the tippy tappy. Arsenal and Barcelona played this tippy tappy, and it was put to him, and he said, "No, I don't prefer classical music. I prefer heavy metal," which kind of led to, because Klopp being a big German rocker, of course.
Oh, okay.
What can we call Jose Mourinho's football then in musical terms? That's quite interesting.
Boring.
What's bad?
Picture this.
Come on.
For next week, Raph, we go through different playing styles and we equate them to music.
Well, let's do it at the start of next week's show anyway and just get it out of the way. But if a particular band that has just been mentioned there is listening in...
this does not represent...
Look, everyone, people are entitled to their opinions. That's the point of the show.
A lot of people like Picture This.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't.
Oddly enough. Weird.
Subjective.
Everyone likes different things.
Yeah, some people like Scott Brown, some people don't. Isn't it?
It's all coming for full circle.
Scott Brown and Picture This in the same sentence. I would not have thought that would happen when we started the show. But anyway, I think that's it pretty much for this week's show. Unless, Derek, you had something you wanted to say.
Nodding to say I approve at the end of the show.
Oh, good. Well, anyway, that's it anyway for this week's show. Derek, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Jules.
And Nicole, thanks for coming
in. Raph.
Jonathan Higgins.
Thanks, Raph.
Joe, thanks for taking the call and congrats on Mayo's trophy win as well, given that this doesn't happen very often.
Is he going to sing "To Win Just Once" or something?
No,
for
I'm just going to say it, Raph. Mayo for Sam.
Mayo. I thought you were a Mayo for Connacht title and see what happens
Mayo
after
for
that.
Super 8.
Hopefully, get into the to the Super 8.
Well, you know, we're just taking it one game.
Yeah. Well, look, if Leitrim beat Roscommon, we're playing ye. So
you blew your cover there. You blew your cover there, Joe. Your paced season ahead.
You know,
I've
like Mayo flags sticking out of the car and everything.
But anyway, that's it for this week's show. We'll be back next week. Take it away, Johan.